Chapter 2. Introduction. Why Beelzebub was in our solar system. It was in the year 223 after the creation of the world by objective time calculation, or, as it would be said here on the Earth, in the year 1921 after the birth of Christ. Through the universe flew the ship Karnak of the Trans-Space Communication. It was flying from the spaces Asu Parat Sata, that is, from the spaces of the Milky Way, from the planet Caritas to the solar system Pandetsnok, the sun of which is also called the Pole Star. On the said trans-space ship was Beelzebub with his kinsmen and near attendants. He was on his way to the planet Revoz Radendra, to a special conference in which he had consented to take part at the request of his friends of long standing. Only the remembrance of these old friendships had constrained him to accept this invitation, since he was no longer young, and so a lengthy journey and the vicissitudes inseparable from it were by no means an easy task for one of his years. Only a little before this journey, Beelzebub had returned home to the planet Caritas, where he had received his arising, and far from which, on account of circumstances independent of his own essence, he had passed many years of his existence in conditions not proper to his nature. This many-year existence, unsuited to him, together with the perceptions unusual for his nature, and the experiences not proper to his essence involved in it, had not failed to leave on his common presence a perceptible mark. Besides, time itself had by now inevitably aged him, and the said unusual conditions of existence had brought Beelzebub, just that Beelzebub who had had such an exceptionally strong, fiery and splendid youth, to an also exceptional old age. Long, long before, while Beelzebub was still existing at home on the planet Caritas, he had been taken, owing to his extraordinarily resourceful intelligence, into service on the Sun Absolute, where our Lord Sovereign Endlessness has the fundamental place of his dwelling. And there Beelzebub, among others like himself, had become an attendant upon his endlessness. It was just then that, owing to the as yet unformed reason due to his youth, and owing to his callow and therefore still impetuous mentation with unequally flowing associations, that is, owing to a mentation based, as is natural to beings who have not yet become definitely responsible, on a limited understanding, Beelzebub once saw in the government of the world something which seemed to him illogical, and having found support among his comrades, beings like himself not yet formed, interfered in what was none of his business. Thanks to the impetuosity and force of Beelzebub's nature, his intervention together with his comrades then soon captured all minds, and the effect was to bring the central kingdom of the megalocosmos almost to the edge of revolution. Having learned of this, his endlessness, notwithstanding his all-lovingness and all-forgiveness, was constrained to banish Beelzebub with his comrades to one of the remote corners of the universe, namely to the solar system Oz, whose inhabitants call it simply the solar system, and to assign as the place of their existence one of the planets of that solar system, namely Mars, with the privilege of existing on other planets also, though only of the same solar system. Among these exiles, besides the said comrades of Beelzebub, were a number of those who merely sympathized with him, and also the attendants and subordinates, both of Beelzebub and of his comrades. All, with their households, arrived at this remote place, and there, In a short time, on the planet Mars, a whole colony was formed of three centered beings from various planets of the central part of our great universe. All this population, extraordinary for the said planet, accommodated itself little by little to its new dwelling place, and many of them even found one or another occupation for shortening the long years of their exile. They found occupations either on this same planet Mars or upon the neighbouring planets, namely on those planets that had been almost entirely neglected on account of their remoteness from the centre and the poverty of all their formations. As the years rolled by, many, either on their own initiative or in response to needs of general character, migrated gradually from the planet Mars to other planets. But Beelzebub himself, together with his near attendants, remained on the planet Mars, where he organized his existence more or less tolerably. One of his chief occupations was the arranging of an observatory on the planet Mars for the observation both of remote points of the universe and of the conditions of existence of beings on neighbouring planets. And this observatory of his, it may here be remarked, afterwards became well known and even famous everywhere in the universe. Although the solar system Oort had been neglected owing to its remoteness from the centre and to many other reasons, nevertheless, our Lord Sovereign had sent from time to time his messengers to the planets of this system to regulate, more or less, the being existence of the three-brained beings arising on them for the coordination of the process of their existence with the general world harmony. And thus, to a certain planet of this solar system, namely the planet Earth, there was once sent, as such a messenger from our endlessness, a certain Ashiata Shirmash. And as Beelzebub had then fulfilled a certain need in connection with his mission, the said messenger, when he returned once more to the Sun Absolute, earnestly besought his endlessness to pardon this once young and fiery but now aged Beelzebub. In view of this request of Ashiata Shirmash, and also of the modest and cognizant existence of Beelzebub himself, our Maker-Creator pardoned him and gave him permission to return to the place of his arising. And that is why Beelzebub, after a long absence, happened now to be again in the centre of the universe. His influence and authority had not only not declined during his exile, but, on the contrary, they had greatly increased, since all those around him were clearly aware that, thanks to his prolonged existence in the aforementioned unusual conditions, his knowledge and experience must inevitably have been broadened and deepened. And so, when events of great importance occurred on one of the planets of the solar system Pandetsnok, Beelzebub's old friends had decided to intrude upon him and to invite him to the conference concerning these events. And it was as the outcome of this that Beelzebub was now making the long journey on the ship Karnak from the planet Karatas to the planet Revozvradendra. On this big spaceship Karnak, the passengers included the kinsmen and attendants of Beelzebub, and also many beings who served on the ship itself. During the period to which this tale of ours refers, all the passengers were occupied either with their duties or simply with the actualization of what is called active being mentation. Among all the passengers aboard the ship, one very handsome boy was conspicuous. He was always near Beelzebub himself. This was Hassan, the son of Beelzebub's favourite son Tuluf. After his return home from exile, Beelzebub had seen this grandson of his, Hassan, for the first time, and appreciating his good heart, and also owing to what is called family attraction, he took an instant liking to him. And as the time happened to coincide with the time when the reason of little Hussein needed to be developed, Beelzebub, having a great deal of free time there, himself undertook the education of his grandson, and from that time on took Hussein everywhere about with him. That is why Hussein also was accompanying Beelzebub on this long journey, and was among the number around him. And Hussein on his side so loved his grandfather that he would not stir a step without him, and he eagerly absorbed everything his grandfather either said or taught. At the time of this narrative, Beelzebub with Hussein and his devoted old servant Ahun, who always accompanied him everywhere, were seated on the highest kaznik, that is, on the upper deck of the ship Karnak, under the Kalnokrononis, somewhat resembling what we should call a large glass bell, and were talking there among themselves while observing the boundless space. Beelzebub was talking about the solar system where he had passed long years, and Beelzebub was just then describing the peculiarities of the nature of the planet called Venus. During the conversation, it was reported to Beelzebub that the captain of their ship wished to speak with him, and to this request Beelzebub acceded. Chapter 3. The Cause of the Delay in the Falling of the Ship Karnak. The captain soon afterward entered, and having performed before Beelzebub all the ceremonies appropriate to Beelzebub's rank, said, "Your right reverence, allow me to ask your authoritative opinion upon an inevitability that lies in the line of our course, and which will hinder our smooth falling by the shortest route. The point is that if we follow our intended course, then our ship, after 2 kilpranos, will pass through the solar system Vuarnik. But just through where our ship must pass, there must also pass, about a kilprano before, the great comet belonging to that solar system and named Sakur, or, as it is sometimes called, the Madcap. So if we keep our proposed course, we must inevitably traverse the space through which this comet will have to pass. Your right reverence, of course, knows that this Madcap comet always leaves in its track a great deal of Zilnitrago, which on entering the planetary body of a being disorganises most of its functions until all the Zilnitrago is volatilised out of it. I thought at first," continued the captain, "of avoiding the Zilnitrago by steering the ship around these spheres. But for this a long detour would be necessary, which would greatly lengthen the time of our passage. On the other hand, to wait somewhere until the Zilnitrago is dispersed would take still longer. In view of the sharp distinction in the alternatives before us, I cannot myself decide what to do, and so I have ventured to trouble you, your right reverence, for your competent advice." The captain having finished speaking, Beelzebub thought a little, and then said as follows, "Really, I do not know how to advise you, my dear captain." "Ah, yes. In that solar system where I existed for a long time, there is a planet called Earth. On that planet Earth arose, and still continue to arise, very strange three-centred beings. And among the beings of a continent of that planet called Asia, there arose and existed a very wise three-brained being, whom they called there Mullah Nasr ad-Din. For each and every peculiar situation, great and small, in the existence of the beings there," Beelzebub continued, "this same terrestrial sage Mullah Nasr ad-Din had an apt and pithy saying. As all his sayings were full of the sense of truth for existence there, I also always used them there as a guide, in order to have a comfortable existence among the beings of that planet. And in the given case too, my dear captain, I intend to profit by one of his wise sayings. In such a situation as has befallen us, he would probably say, "You cannot jump over your knees, and it is absurd to try to kiss your own elbow." I now say the same to you, and I add, there is nothing to be done. When an event is impending, which arises from forces immeasurably greater than our own, one must submit. The only question is, which of the alternatives you mentioned should be chosen? That is, to wait somewhere or to add to our journey by a detour. You say that to make a detour will greatly lengthen our journey, but that waiting will take still longer. Good, my dear captain. Suppose that by making the detour we should save a little time. What do you think? Is the wear and tear of the parts of our ship's machinery worthwhile for the sake of ending our journey a little sooner? If the detour should involve even the most trifling damage to our ship, then in my opinion we ought to prefer your second suggestion, that is, to stop somewhere until the path is cleared of the noxious Zilnitrago. By that means we should spare our ship useless damage. And we will try to fill the period of this unforeseen delay with something useful for us all. For instance, it would give me personally great pleasure to talk with you about contemporary ships in general, and about our ship in particular. Very many new things, of which I still know nothing, have been done in this field during my absence from these parts. For example, in my time, these big trans-space ships were so complicated and cumbersome that it took almost half their power to carry the materials necessary to elaborate their possibility of locomotion. But in their simplicity and the freedom on them, these contemporary ships are just embodiments of bliss or kierno. There is such a simplicity for beings upon them and such freedom in respect of all being manifestations that at times you forget that you are not on one of the planets. So, my dear captain, I should like very much to know how this boon was brought about, and how the contemporary ships work. But now, go and make all arrangements necessary for the required stopping. And then, when you are quite free, come to me again, and we will pass the time of our unavoidable delay in conversation useful for us all. When the captain had gone, Hussein suddenly sprang to his feet and began to dance and clap his hands and shout, "Oh, I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm glad of this!" Beelzebub looked with affection on these joyous manifestations of his favourite, but old Ahun could not restrain himself and, shaking his head reproachfully, called the boy, half to himself, a growing egoist. Hearing what Ahun called him, Hussein stopped in front of him and, looking at him mischievously, said, "Don't be angry with me, old Ahun. The reason for my joy is not egoism, but only the coincidence which chances to be happy for me. You heard, didn't you? My dear grandfather did not decide only just to make a stop, but he also promised the captain to talk with him. And you know, don't you, that the talks of my dear grandfather always bring out tales of places where he has been, and you know also how delightfully he tells them, and how much new and interesting information becomes crystallized in our presences from these tales. Where is the egoism? Hasn't he himself, of his own free will, having weighed with his wise reason all the circumstances of this unforeseen event, decided to make a stop which evidently doesn't upset his intended plans very much? It seems to me that my dear grandfather has no need to hurry. Everything necessary for his rest and comfort is present on the Karnak, and here also are many who love him and whom he loves. Don't you remember he said recently, "We must not oppose forces higher than our own," and added that not only one must not oppose them, but even submit and receive all their results with reverence, at the same time praising and glorifying the wonderful and providential works of our Lord Creator. "I'm not glad because of the misadventure, but because an unforeseen event issuing from above has occurred, owing to which we shall be able to listen once more to the tales of my dear grandfather. Is it my fault that the circumstances are by chance most desirable and happy for me? No, dear Ahun, not only should you not rebuke me, but you should join me in expressing gratitude to the source of all beneficent results that arise." All this time, Beelzebub listened attentively and with a smile to the chatter of his favourite, and when he had finished, said, "You are right, dear Hussein, and for being right, I will tell you, even before the captain's arrival, anything you like." Upon hearing this, the boy at once ran and sat at the feet of Beelzebub, and after thinking a little, said, "My dear grandfather, you have told me so much about the solar system where you spent so many years that now perhaps I could continue just by logic alone to describe the details of the nature of that peculiar corner of our universe. But I am curious to know whether there dwell three brain beings on the planets of that solar system and whether higher being bodies are coated in them. Please tell me now about just this, dear grandfather," concluded Hussein, looking affectionately up at Beelzebub. "Yes," replied Beelzebub, "on almost all the planets of that solar system also, three-brained beings dwell, and in almost all of them, higher being bodies can be coated." "Higher being bodies, or as they are called on some planets of that solar system, souls, arise in the three-brained beings breeding on all the planets, except those before reaching which the emanations of our most holy Sun Absolute, owing to repeated deflections, gradually lose the fullness of their strength and eventually cease entirely to contain the vivific power for coating higher being bodies. Certainly, my boy, on each separate planet of that solar system also, the planetary bodies of the three-brained beings are coated and take an exterior form in conformity with the nature of the given planet and are adapted in their details to the surrounding nature. For instance, on that planet on which it was ordained that all we exiles should exist, namely the planet Mars, the three-brained beings are coated with planetary bodies having the form, how shall I tell you? A form like a karuna. That is to say, they have a long broad trunk, amply provided with fat, and heads with enormous protruding and shining eyes. On the back of this enormous planetary body of theirs are two large wings, and on the underside two comparatively small feet with very strong claws. Almost the whole strength of this enormous planetary body is adapted by nature to generate energy for their eyes and for their wings. As a result, the three-brained beings breeding on that planet can see freely everywhere, whatever the Kaldazak T, and they can also move not only over the planet itself, but also in its atmosphere, and some of them occasionally even manage to travel beyond the limits of its atmosphere. The three-brained beings breeding on another planet, a little below the planet Mars, owing to the intense cold there, are covered with thick, soft wool. The external form of these three-centred beings is like that of a tusuk, that is, it resembles a kind of double sphere, the upper sphere serving to contain the principal organs of the whole planetary body, and the other, the lower sphere, the organs for the transformation of the first and second being foods. There are three apertures in the upper sphere, opening outwards. Two serve for sight, and the third for hearing. The other, the lower sphere, has only two apertures, one in front for taking in the first and second being foods, and the other at the back for the elimination from the organism of residues. To the lower sphere are also attached two very strong, sinewy feet, and on each of these is a growth that serves the purpose of fingers with us. There is still another planet, a quite small one, bearing the name Moon in that solar system, my dear boy. During its motion, this peculiar little planet often approached very near to our planet Mars, and sometimes, during whole Kilpranos, I took great pleasure in observing through my Tescuano, in my observatory, the process of existence of the three-brained beings upon it. Though the beings of this planet have very frail planetary bodies, they have, on the other hand, a very strong spirit, owing to which they all possess an extraordinary perseverance and capacity for work. In exterior form, they resemble what are called large ants, and like these, they are always bustling about, working both on and within their planet. The results of their ceaseless activity are now already plainly visible. I once happened to notice that during two of our years, they tunnelled, so to say, the whole of their planet. They were compelled to undertake this task on account of the abnormal local climatic conditions, which are due to the fact that this planet arose unexpectedly, and the regulation of its climatic harmony was therefore not prearranged by the higher powers. The climate of this planet is mad, and in its variability, it could give points to the most highly strung hysterical women existing on another of the planets of that same solar system, of which I shall also tell you. Sometimes there are such frosts on this moon that everything is frozen through and through, and it becomes impossible for beings to breathe in the open atmosphere. And then suddenly it becomes so hot there that an egg can be cooked in its atmosphere in a jiffy. For only two short periods on that peculiar little planet, namely, before and after its complete revolution about its neighbour, another planet nearby, the weather is so glorious that for several rotations the whole planet is in blossom and yields the various products for their first being food greatly in excess of their general need during their existence in that peculiar intraplanetary kingdom which they have arranged, and where they are protected from all the vagaries of this mad climate inharmoniously changing the state of the atmosphere. Nearest to that small planet is another, a larger planet, which also occasionally approaches quite close to the planet Mars, and is called Earth. The said moon is just a part of this Earth, and the latter must now constantly maintain the moon's existence. On the just mentioned planet Earth also, three-brained beings are formed, and they also contain all the data for coating higher being bodies in themselves. But in strength of spirit, they do not begin to compare with the beings breeding on the little planet aforementioned. The external coatings of the three-brained beings of that planet Earth closely resemble our own, only, first of all, their skin is a little slimier than ours, and then, secondly, they have no tail, and their heads are without horns. What is worst about them is their feet. Namely, they have no hoofs. It is true that for protection against external influences, they have invented what they call boots, but this invention does not help them very much. Apart from the imperfection of their exterior form, their reason also is quite uniquely strange. Their being reason, owing to very many causes, about which also I may tell you sometime, has gradually degenerated, and at the present time is very, very strange and exceedingly peculiar. Beelzebub would have said still more, but the captain of the ship entering at that moment, Beelzebub, after promising the boy to tell him about the beings of the planet Earth on another occasion, began to talk with the captain. Beelzebub asked the captain to tell him, first, who he was, how long he had been captain, and how he liked his work, and afterwards to explain some of the details of the contemporary cosmic ships. Thereupon, the captain said, "Your right reverence, I was destined by my father, as soon as I reached the age of a responsible being, for this career in the service of our endless creator. Starting with the lowest positions on the trans-space ships, I ultimately merited to perform the duties of captain, and it is now 8 years that I have been captain on the long-distance ships. This last post of mine, namely that of captain of the ship Karnak, I took, strictly speaking, in succession to my father, when, after his long years of blameless service to his endlessness in the performance of the duties of captain from almost the very beginning of the world creation, he had become worthy to be promoted to the post of ruler of the solar system Kalman. In short," continued the captain, "I began my service just when your right reverence was departing for the place of your exile. I was still only a sweeper on the long-distance ships of that period. Yes, a long, long time has passed by. Everything has undergone change and is changed since then. Only our Lord and Sovereign remains unchanged. The blessings of Amenzano on his unchangeableness throughout eternity. You, your right reverence, have condescended to remark very justly that the former ships were very inconvenient and cumbersome. Yes, they were then indeed very complicated and cumbersome. I too remember them very well. There is an enormous difference between the ships of that time and the ships now. In our youth, all such ships, both for inter-system and for interplanetary communication, were still run on the cosmic substance Elekil Pomagtistsen, which is a totality consisting of two separate parts of the omnipresent Okidanok. And it was to obtain this totality that just those numerous materials were necessary which the former ships had to carry. But these ships did not remain in use long after you flew from these parts, having soon thereafter been replaced by ships of the system of Saint Venoma." Chapter 4. The Law of Falling. The captain continued. This happened in the year 185 by objective time calculation. Saint Venoma had been taken for his merits from the planet Sort to the holy planet Purgatory, where, after he had familiarized himself with his new surroundings and new duties, he gave all his free time to his favorite work. And his favorite work was to seek what new phenomena could be found in various combinations of already existing law-conformable phenomena. And sometime later, in the course of these occupations, this Saint Venoma first constated in cosmic laws what later became a famous discovery, and this discovery he first called the Law of Falling. This cosmic law, which he then discovered, Saint Venoma himself formulated thus: everything existing in the world falls to the bottom, and the bottom, for any part of the universe, is its nearest stability, and this said stability is the place or the point upon which all the lines of force arriving from all directions converge. The centres of all the suns and of all the planets of our universe are just such points of stability. They are the lowest points of those regions of space upon which forces from all directions of the given part of the universe definitely tend and where they are concentrated. In these points, there is also concentrated the equilibrium which enables suns and planets to maintain their position. In this formulation of his, Saint Venoma said further that everything, when dropped into space, wherever it may be, tends to fall on one or another sun, or on one or another planet, according to which sun or planet the given part of space belongs to where the object is dropped, each sun or planet being for the given sphere the stability or bottom. Starting from this, Saint Venoma reasoned in his further researches as follows. If this be so, may it not therefore be possible to employ this cosmic particularity for the locomotion we need between the spaces of the universe? And from then on, he worked in this direction. His further saintly labours showed that although in principle this was in general possible, yet it was impossible fully to employ for this purpose this law of falling discovered by him, and it would be impossible owing solely to the atmospheres around most of the cosmic concentrations, which atmospheres would hinder the straight falling of the object dropped in space. Having constated this, Saint Venoma then devoted his whole attention to discovering some means of overcoming the said atmospheric resistance for ships constructed on the principle of falling. And after 3 luniases, Saint Venoma did find such a possibility, and later on, when the building of a suitable special construction had been completed under his direction, he proceeded to practical trials. This special construction had the appearance of a large enclosure, all the walls of which were made of a special material, something like glass. Then to every side of that large enclosure were fitted things like shutters of a material impervious to the rays of the cosmic substance, Elekilpomagtistsen, and these shutters, although closely fitted to the walls of the said enclosure, could yet freely slide in every direction. Within the enclosure was placed a special battery, generating and giving this same substance, Elekilpomagtistsen. I myself, your right reverence, was present at the first trials made by Saint Venoma according to the principles he had discovered. The whole secret lay in this, that when the rays of Elekilpomagtistsen were made to pass through this special glass, then in all the space they reached, everything usually composing the atmosphere itself of planets, such as air, every kind of gas, fog, and so on, was destroyed. This part of space became indeed absolutely empty, and had neither resistance nor pressure, so that, if even an infant being pushed this enormous structure, it would move forward as easily as a feather. To the outer side of this peculiar structure, there were attached appliances similar to wings, which were set in motion by means of this same substance, Elekilpomagtistsen, and served to give the impetus to move all this enormous construction in the required direction. The results of these experiments having been approved and blessed by the Commission of Inspection under the presidency of Archangel Adossia, the construction of a big ship based on these principles was begun. The ship was soon ready and commissioned for service, and in a short time, little by little, ships of this type came to be used exclusively on all the lines of inter-system communication. Although later, your right reverence, the inconveniences of this system gradually became more and more apparent, nevertheless, it continued to displace all the systems that had existed before. It cannot be gainsaid that although the ships constructed on this system were ideal in atmosphereless spaces and moved there almost with the speed of the rays Etzikonian-Aknian issuing from planets, yet when nearing some sun or planet, it became real torture for the beings directing them, as a great deal of complicated manoeuvring was necessary. The need for this manoeuvring was due to the same law of falling. And this was because when the ship came into the medium of the atmosphere of some sun or planet which it had to pass, it immediately began to fall towards that sun or planet, and as I have already intimated, very much care and considerable knowledge were needed to prevent the ship from falling out of its course. While the ships were passing near any sun or planet whatsoever, their speed of locomotion had sometimes to be reduced hundreds of times below their usual rate. It was particularly difficult to steer them in those spheres where there was a great aggregation of comets. That is why great demands were then made upon the beings who had to direct these ships, and they were prepared for these duties by beings of very high reason. But in spite of the said drawbacks of the system of St. Venoma, it gradually, as I have already said, displaced all the previous systems, and the ships of this system of St. Venoma had already existed for 23 years, when it was first rumoured that the angel Hareton had invented a new type of ship for inter-system and interplanetary communication. Chapter 5. The System of Archangel Hareton. And indeed, soon after this rumour, practical experiments open to all, again under the superintendence of the great Archangel Adossia, were made with this new and later very famous invention. This new system was unanimously acknowledged to be the best, and very soon it was adopted for general universal service, and thereafter gradually all previous systems were entirely superseded. That system of the great angel, now Archangel Hareton, is now in use everywhere at the present day. The ship on which we are now flying also belongs to this system, and its construction is similar to that of all the ships built on the system of the Angel Hareton. This system is not very complicated. The whole of this great invention consists of only a single cylinder shaped like an ordinary barrel. The secret of this cylinder lies in the disposition of the materials of which its inner side is made. These materials are arranged in a certain order and isolated from each other by means of amber. They have such a property that if any cosmic gaseous substance whatever enters the space which they enclose, whether it be atmosphere, air, ether, or any other totality of homogeneous cosmic elements, it immediately expands, owing to the mentioned disposition of materials within the cylinder. The bottom of this cylinder barrel is hermetically sealed, but its lid, although it can be closely shut, yet is so arranged on hinges that at a pressure from within it can be opened and shut again. So, Your Right Reverence, if this cylinder barrel is filled with atmosphere, air, or any other such substance, then from the action of the walls of this peculiar cylinder barrel, these substances expand to such an extent that the interior becomes too small to hold them. Striving to find an outlet from this, for them, constricted interior, they naturally press also against the lid of the cylinder barrel, and thanks to the said hinges, the lid opens and, having allowed these expanded substances to escape, immediately closes again. And as in general nature abhors a vacuum, then simultaneously with the release of the expanded gaseous substances, the cylinder barrel is again filled with fresh substances from outside, with which in their turn the same proceeds as before, and so on, without end. Thus, the substances are always being changed, and the lid of the cylinder barrel alternately opens and shuts. To this same lid, there is fixed a very simple lever, which moves with the movement of the lid, and in turn sets in motion certain also very simple cogwheels, which again in their turn revolve the fans attached to the sides and stern of the ship itself. Thus, your right reverence, in spaces where there is no resistance, contemporary ships like ours simply fall towards the nearest stability. But in spaces where there are any cosmic substances which offer resistance, these substances, whatever their density, with the aid of this cylinder, enable the ship to move in any desired direction. It is interesting to remark that the denser the substance is in any given part of the universe, the better and more strongly the charging and discharging of this cylinder barrel proceed, and in consequence, of course, the force of the movement of the levers is also changed. But nevertheless, I repeat, a sphere without atmosphere, that is, a space containing only world ether Krillno, is, for contemporary ships, also the best, because in such a sphere there is no resistance at all, and the law of falling can therefore be fully employed in it without any assistance from the work of the cylinder. Further than this, the contemporary ships are also good because they contain such possibilities that in atmosphereless spaces an impetus can be given to them in any direction, and they can fall just where desired without the complicated manipulations necessary in ships of the system of Saint Venoma. In short, your right reverence, the convenience and simplicity of the contemporary ships are beyond comparison with former ships, which were often both very complicated and at the same time had none of the possibilities of the ships we use now. Chapter 10. Why Men Are Not Men. Beelzebub sighed deeply and continued to speak as follows. After the actualizing on this planet of the Ilnisopanian process, 1 year by objective time calculation passed. During this period, there had gradually been coordinated on this planet also the corresponding processes for the involution and evolution of everything arising there. And of course, there began gradually to be crystallized in the three-brained beings there the corresponding data for the acquisition of objective reason. In short, on this planet also, everything had then already begun to proceed in the usual normal order. And therefore, my boy, if the Most High Commission, under the supreme direction of the same Archangel Sakaki, had not, at the end of a year, gone there again, perhaps all the subsequent misunderstandings connected with the three-brained beings arising on that ill-fated planet might not have occurred. This second descent of the Most High Commission to that planet was due to the fact that, in spite of the measures they had taken, of which I have told you, there had not yet crystallized in the reasons of the majority of its sacred members a complete assurance of the impossibility of any undesirable surprise in the future. And they now wished to verify on the spot the results of those measures. It was just during this second descent that the Most High Commission decided, in any event, if only for the sake of their own reassurance, to actualize certain further special measures, among which was also that measure, the consequences of which have not only gradually turned into a stupendous terror for the three-brained beings themselves who arise on this ill-fated planet, but have even become, so to say, a malignant sore for the whole of the great universe. You must know that by the time of this second descent of the Most High Commission, there had already gradually been engendered in them, as is proper to three-brained beings, what is called mechanical instinct. The sacred members of this most high commission then reasoned that if the said mechanical instinct in these biped three-brained beings of that planet should develop towards the attainment of objective reason, as usually occurs everywhere among three-brained beings, then it might quite possibly happen that they would prematurely comprehend the real cause of their arising and existence and make a great deal of trouble. It might happen that, having understood the reason for their arising, namely that by their existence they should maintain the detached fragments of their planet, and being convinced of this, their slavery to circumstances utterly foreign to them, they would be unwilling to continue their existence and would, on principle, destroy themselves. So, my boy, in view of this, the Most High Commission then decided, among other things, provisionally to implant into the common presences of the three-brained beings there a special organ with a property such that, first, they should perceive reality topsy-turvy, and, secondly, that every repeated impression from outside should crystallize in them data which would engender factors for evoking in them sensations of pleasure and enjoyment. And then, in fact, with the help of the chief common universal arch-chemist physicist Angel Luisos, who was also among the members of this most high commission, they caused to grow in the three-brained beings there, in a special way, at the base of their spinal column, at the root of their tail, which they also at that time still had, and which part of their common presences, furthermore, still had its normal exterior expressing the, so to say, fullness of its inner significance, a something which assisted the arising of the said properties in them. And this something they then first called the organ Kundabuffer. Having made this organ grow in the presences of the three-brained beings, and having seen that it would work, the Most High Commission, consisting of sacred individuals headed by the Archangel Sakaki, reassured and with good consciences, returned to the centre, while there on the planet Earth, which has taken your fancy, the action of this astonishing and exceedingly ingenious invention began from the first day to develop, and developed, as the wise Mullah Nasruddin would say, like a Jericho trumpet in crescendo. Now, in order that you may have at least an approximate understanding of the results of the properties of the organ devised and actualized by the incomparable Angel Luisos, blessed be his name to all eternity, it is indispensable that you should know about the various manifestations of the three-brained beings of that planet, not only during the period when this organ Kundabuffer existed in their presences, but also during the later periods when, although this astonishing organ and its properties had been destroyed in them, nevertheless, owing to many causes, the consequences of its properties had begun to be crystallized in their presences. But this I will explain to you later. Meanwhile, you must note that there was still a third descent of that Most High Commission to that planet 3 years later, according to objective time calculations. But this time, it was under the direction of the Most Great Arch-Seraph Sevohatra, the Most Great Archangel Sakaki, having in the meantime become worthy to become the divine individual he now is, namely one of the four quarter maintainers of the whole universe. And during just this third descent there, when it was made clear by the thorough investigations of the sacred members of this third Most High Commission that for the maintenance of the existence of those said detached fragments, there was no longer any need to continue to actualize the deliberately taken anticipatory measures, then among the other measures, there was also destroyed, with the help of the same arch-chemist-physicist Angel Luisos, in the presences of the three-brained beings there, the said organ Kundabuffer, with all its astonishing properties. But let us return to the tale I began. Now listen. When our confusion, caused by the recent catastrophe that had menaced that whole solar system, had passed off, we slowly, after this unexpected interruption, resumed the settlement of our new place on the planet Mars. Little by little, we all of us made ourselves familiar with the local nature and adapted ourselves to the existing conditions. As I have already said, many of us definitely settled down on the planet Mars, and others, by the ship Occasion, which had been put at the disposal of the beings of our tribe for interplanetary communication, either went or prepared to go to exist on other planets of the same solar system. But I, with my kinsmen and some of my near attendants, remained to exist on that planet Mars. Yes, I must note that by the time to which my tale refers, my first Tescuano had already been set up in the observatory which I had constructed on the planet Mars, and I was just then devoting myself entirely to the further organisation and development of this observatory of mine, for the more detailed observation of the remote concentrations of our great universe and of the planets of this solar system. Among the objects of my observations, then, was also this planet Earth. Time passed. The process of existence on this planet also began gradually to be established, and it seemed, from all appearances, that the process of existence was proceeding there just as on all other planets. But by close observation, first, it could be clearly seen that the numbers of these three-brained beings were gradually increasing, and, secondly, it was possible sometimes to observe very strange manifestations of theirs. That is, from time to time they did something which was never done by three-brained beings on other planets, namely, they would suddenly, without rhyme or reason, begin destroying one another's existence. Sometimes this destruction of one another's existence proceeded then not in one region alone, but in several, and would last not just one Deinosk, but many Deinosks, and sometimes even for whole Ornacras. Deinosk signifies day, Ornacra signifies month. It was sometimes very noticeable also that from this horrible process of theirs, their numbers rapidly diminished. But on the other hand, during other periods, when there was a lull in these processes, their numbers also very noticeably increased. To this peculiarity of theirs, we gradually got used, having explained it to ourselves that obviously, for certain higher considerations, these properties also must deliberately have been given to the organ Kundabuffer by the Most High Commission. In other words, seeing the fecundity of these biped beings, we assumed that this had been done with a forethought, in view of the necessity that they should exist in such large numbers for the needs of the maintenance of the common cosmic harmonious movement. Had it not been for this strange peculiarity of theirs, it would never have entered anybody's head that there was anything queer on that planet. During the period to which the aforesaid refers, I visited most of the planets of that solar system, the populated and the as yet unpopulated. Personally, I like best of all the three centred beings breeding on the planet bearing the name Saturn, whose exterior is quite unlike ours, but resembles that of the being bird Raven. It is interesting, by the way, to remark that for some reason or other, the form of being bird Raven breeds not only on almost all the planets of this solar system, but also on most of those other planets of the whole of our great universe upon which beings of various brain systems arise and are coated with planetary bodies of different forms. The verbal intercourse of these beings ravens of that planet Saturn is something like ours, but in regard to their utterance, it is, in my opinion, the most beautiful of any I have ever heard. It can be compared to the singing of our best singers when with all their being they sing in a minor key. And as for their relations with others, they, I don't even know how to describe them, can be known only by existing among them and by experiencing them oneself. All that can be said is that these being birds have hearts exactly like those of the angels nearest our endless maker and creator. They exist strictly according to the ninth commandment of our creator, namely, do unto another's as you would do unto your own. Later I must certainly tell you much more in detail about those three brain beings also who arise and exist on the planet Saturn, since one of my real friends during the whole period of my exile in that solar system was a being of just that planet, who had the exterior coating of a raven and whose name was Ha-Ha. Chapter 11. A Piquant Trait of the Peculiar Psyche of Contemporary Man. Now let us return to those three-brained beings arising on the planet Earth who have interested you most of all and whom you have called slugs. I shall begin by saying how glad I am that you happen to be a long way from those three-centred beings whom you called by a word so insulting to their dignity, and that they are not likely ever to hear of it. Do you know, you poor thing, you small boy not yet aware of himself, what they would do to you, particularly the contemporary beings there, if they should hear what you called them? What they would have done to you, if you had been there and if they had got hold of you, I am seized with horror at the very mention of it. At best, they would have thrashed you so that, as our Mullah Nasr ed-Din there says, you wouldn't have recovered your senses before the next crop of birches. In any case, I advise you that, whenever you start anything new, you should always bless fate and beseech her mercy that she should always be on guard and prevent the beings of the planet Earth from ever suspecting that you, my beloved and only grandson, dared to call them slugs. You must know that during the time of my observations of them from the planet Mars, and during the periods of my existence among them, I studied the psyche of these strange three-brained beings very thoroughly, and so I already know very well what they would do to anybody who dared to give them such a nickname. To be sure, it was only in childish naivety that you called them so, but the three-brained beings of that peculiar planet, especially the contemporary ones, do not discriminate such fine points. Who called them, why, and in what circumstances, it's all one. They have been called by a name they consider insulting, and that's quite enough. Discrimination in such matters is, according to the understanding of most of them, simply, as they express it, pouring from the empty into the void. Be that as it may, you were in any case extremely rash to call the three-brained beings breeding on the planet Earth by such an offensive name. First, because you have made me anxious for you, and secondly, because you have laid up for yourself a menace for the future. The position is this. Though, as I have already said, you are a long way off and they will be unable to get at you to punish you personally, yet nevertheless, if they should somehow unexpectedly chance to learn, even at 20th hand, how you insulted them, then you could at once be sure of their real anathema, and the dimensions of this anathema would depend upon the interests with which they happened to be occupied at the given moment. Perhaps it is worthwhile describing to you how the beings of the earth would behave if they should happen to learn that you had so insulted them. This description may serve as a very good example for the elucidation of the strangeness of the psyche of these three-brained beings who interest you. Provoked by such an incident as you're thus insulting them, if everything was rather dull with them at the given moment, owing to the absence of any other similar absurd interest, they would arrange somewhere in a previously chosen place with previously invited people, all of course dressed in costumes specially designed for such occasions, what is called a solemn council. First of all, for this solemn council of theirs, they would select from among themselves what is called a president, and only then would they proceed with their trial. To begin with, they would, as they say there, pick you to pieces, and not only you, but your father, your grandfather, and perhaps even all the way back to Adam. If they should then decide, of course, as always, by a majority of votes, that you are guilty, they would sentence you according to the indications of a code of laws collated on the basis of former similar puppet plays by beings called old fossils. But if they should happen, by a majority of votes, to find nothing criminal in your action at all, though this very seldom occurs among them, then this whole trial of theirs, set out on paper in detail and signed by the whole lot of them, would be dispatched, you would think, into the waste paper basket. Oh no, to appropriate specialists in the given instances to what is called the hierarchy or holy synod, where the same procedure would be repeated, only in this case you would be tried by important beings there. Only at the very end of this true pouring from the empty into the void would they come to the main point, namely that the accused is out of reach. But it is just here that arises the principal danger to your person, namely that when they are quite certain beyond all doubt that they cannot get hold of you, they will then unanimously decide nothing more nor less than, as I have already said, to anathematize you. And do you know what that is and how it is done? No? Then listen and shudder. The most important beings will decree to all the other beings that in their appointed establishments, such as what are called churches, chapels, synagogues, town halls, and so on, special officials shall, on special occasions, with appointed ceremonies, wish for you in thought something like the following: that you should lose your horns, or that your hair should turn prematurely grey, or that the food in your stomach should be turned into coffin nails, or that your future wife's tongue should be three times its size, or that whenever you take a bite of your pet pie, it should be turned into soap, and so on and so forth in the same strain. Do you now understand to what dangers you exposed yourself when you called these remote three-brained freak slugs? Having finished thus, Beelzebub looked with a smile on his favourite.